You again. Hope you all are doing well today. Pretty excited to get to speak to you again. Let me read to us from Proverbs 31, starting in verse 10. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night. She provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hand to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. This is the word of the Lord. So this morning I want to do one talk for women and one talk on men. And of course, we'll let the ladies be first. Both men and women are under attack in our culture. There really is a war on men and a war on women. In fact, it's even worse than that. The very concept of gender itself is under attack. You know, we hear a lot about the war on men or the war on women, but really the war ultimately is on gender itself, gender as an objective reality, what we might call binary sexuality, that there are men and women, that these are created entities, created realities. We can talk about problems with the relationship between the sexes, you know, the so-called battle of the sexes. That's certainly something we need to address. But if you go even deeper than that, what you find is it's the very concept of fixed gender itself that is under attack. Sex itself in that way that is under attack. And this ends up hurting both men and women, though in different ways. I titled this talk Fighting Feminism, because feminism really is an enemy. I think feminism can be considered a Christian heresy of sorts. It is an alien worldview promoting an unnatural or anti-creational way of life for women that has effects across the board for men and for children as well. I'll put it this way. Feminism is the opposite of femininity. I actually think feminists, despite the name, hate femininity. Feminists despise femininity. It's a big problem for feminists. What I want to do is start off with a few anecdotes, and I'm going to take a little bit of time to develop these anecdotes. Some of them are kind of involved, but I want to give you some examples of how feminism has confused and misled women and is actually creating a lot of misery for women. These anecdotes are really mostly from articles that I've come across over the last few years. Some of them will go further back than that, but let me start with this. This is an article from not too long ago. It's an article from a woman, a young woman, entitled, "I am all for feminism, but it's kind of making it harder to date." So she's a committed feminist, but she is finding that feminism is actually making it tough on her dating life. So listen to what she says. It's a young woman, college age. "I consider myself a feminist, but I can't lie. I'm starting to notice its effects on my dating life. This doesn't change my belief in equality. I just hope that men and women can eventually learn to date in harmony because it's pretty messy right now." And then she starts to list the reasons. Number one, so these are reasons why feminism makes it hard to date. "I'm hyper aware of every sexist thing a guy does now. It doesn't take much for me to overanalyze a guy's intentions nowadays. I used to see a guy opening a door for me as nice and polite, but lately, gestures like this have been making me angry." Okay, I've actually heard men opening doors for women. It's been referred to as a symbol of aggressive patriarchy, as though when a man holds open a door for a woman, he's saying, "You can only enter and leave this place with my permission." Okay, that's the way it's being thought about. She goes on, "I know the guys offering these acts of chivalry have no intention to make me feel small or lesser than, but now that my eyes have been opened to feminist theory, it's all I'm able to think about. So I know the guys don't mean it this way, but I interpret it this way because I bought into this feminist theory." Number two, guys have started to think we don't need them anymore. Even though the feminist movement is pretty much the best thing to happen to this world since sliced bread, okay, you see her commitment here, her loyalty to feminism, it's taking its toll in the dating scene. The thing is, I'm starting to get a bit standoffish vibes from guys, like they're afraid to make a move. Gee, I wonder why. And I think it's because they think we don't need them anymore. Number three, she goes on, "One little anti-feminist comment can completely turn me off. When I'm out with a guy and he says one thing that's even remotely," she has remotely in all caps, "offensive towards women, I find it really hard to recover. I instantly write off guys if they aren't woke to the current social mindset towards gender politics, and I can't let it go. Let's just say I've gone on a lot of first dates that never go anywhere." I don't know why. She sounds like she'd be so much fun to be with. Number four, it's like guys are walking on eggshells around us. Gee, you think? Guys are feeling the heat, and we can tell. They're afraid to compliment us. Why would they be afraid to compliment women? Well, because that might be interpreted as sexual harassment. You know, that kind of thing happens now. Or relate to us in ways that they were always taught to. And trust me, this is a good thing. So she sees this as a good thing, that now men are kind of afraid to do this. However, women still like to be pursued, at least I do, and it's unfortunate that by finally standing up for our rights and demanding respect, we're totally scaring men away. It's so messed up and a total shame. Seems to me like this young woman might need to make a choice here. Does she want equal treatment or special treatment? Does she want equality or does she want to be pursued? Because this is just not going to work out for her. Number five, I've been brainwashed to assume the worst in men. Okay, that's something that feminism tends to do. I think I've trained my brain to assume all men are here to try to put me down and dominate me. Okay, so this is the effect of feminism on her view of men. Some people will say, well, feminism's not really anti-man, it's just pro-woman. But there's a lot of evidence that actually it is anti-man. Number six, the debate on who should pay has never been more alive. I won't read all of this one, but she says a guy paying the bill could be seen as anti-feminist. And no guy wants to be considered a misogynist in this day and age. The song and dance of who's going to pay has never been more awkward. Number seven, I'm afraid of scaring off guys by being too feminist. Feminism is something I'm passionate about, as we can tell that. But I also know how guys can get insecure when I talk about it. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm not so sure that it's insecurity on the part of guys here as it is just that they're turned off by this. Number eight, it's made us separate from each other more than ever before. So it's made the sexes separate from each other. Men and women already have so much trouble trying to understand each other, but feminism has turned our society into a bit of a battle of the sexes, which, I mean, who can argue with that? It certainly does that. I talked about that some last night, how a certain view of equality can actually turn compliments into rivals. And you see that happening. She's capturing that here. Number nine, she says, every first date I go on, there's an elephant in the room. It's weird because we're doing the whole man-seeking woman act when we go on dates, but we both know that this old way of seeing each other is on its way out. Number 10, she says, I swear guys are approaching me less. Is it just me? Or are guys doing a lot more looking around than actually approaching? I guess guys are afraid that the way they approach women might offend us or give us the wrong impression. I guess this is a good thing in a way, because now guys have to rack their brain and kind of figure out how to treat women with respect and see us as whole people. Okay? You can just see the confusion. I mean, this poor woman cannot make up her mind about what she really wants. Her feminine instincts are telling her one thing, but her feminist theory is telling her something else. So there's this clash. There's this war within her. She just can't decide what she wants. I said last night, equality is the enemy of romance, and you see that here. It's actually polarity between the sexes that drives attraction. We're attracted to those things about the opposite sex that are opposite, that are different from what we ourselves possess. But this woman is so committed to equality in the sense of sameness that it's completely diminishing anything that might create that attraction between men and women. And I think she's a good example of the dilemma that modern women find themselves in. Modern women are going to have to choose. Do they want equal treatment or do they want special treatment? Do they want equality or do they want romance? Do they want to be pursued by a man or do they want equality with a man? And if there is equality, then who's going to do the pursuing? I've actually seen TV commercials. You probably have these out here. We have them in Alabama. I'm guessing you have them in California. You know, TV commercials where, and it's for a jewelry store, and the woman gets down on her knees and proposes to the man. And I don't know if that really happens very much in real life, but that's where this kind of thing leads. Why not? Why shouldn't that happen? Why shouldn't 50% of all proposals come from women to men instead of what's been traditionally done, where it's always the man asking the woman, always the man taking the risk and putting himself out there? Why not switch that around or divide it up 50-50? Those are questions that I'm not sure feminists really have a good answer to, because just like this woman, they're really not satisfied if you say, well, you know, would you be okay proposing to your boyfriend? No, they really don't like that idea. They don't like that thought. Well, okay, then where's the equality? How's that going to work out? Again, I'm not talking here about theological equality. Women bear God's image just as men do. I'm not talking about legal equality. Women are equal before the law. Those things should be givens. But for feminists, again, remember, equality means that women can function as men. They're interchangeable with men. That's the basic idea. Okay, let me give you another example of this, another anecdote. Taylor Swift. This is from an interview from 2019. It was published in USA Today. While she was on tour, she was asked if she has children or family on her mind since she turns 30 this year. That's what the interviewer asked her. Are you thinking about marriage and having children since you turned 30 years old this year? And this was her response. That's how she answered that question. I really do not think men are asked that question when they turn 30, so I'm not going to answer that. Okay, she turned a simple question, which, I mean, maybe it's not this interviewer's business. Maybe it shouldn't have been asked. But she turns a simple question into an offense, into a grievance. And this is a classic feminist move. But this is what I would want to say back. I think she's right. When men get close to 30 and they're still single, they're generally not asked that question. But why? Why aren't single 30-year-old men, male celebrities, asked that question? And maybe Taylor Swift was too busy with her career to ever take a biology class. But men aren't asked that question for a very simple reason. Men don't have a biological clock the way women do. If women are taught they should be equal to men in the sense of doing what men do, they are going to feel penalized by the fact that they are the ones who get pregnant and who have the babies. If you think men and women should be sexual equals, you are going to find the facts of biology offensive and unfair. Swift has been fooled by feminism in a way that many women of her generation have been fooled by feminism. The fact is, men and women are simply different. We are quite different creatures, and our minds and our bodies are different, and so our life plans, our life maps are going to have to be different as well. Same kind of thing happened just in the last couple weeks. Someone sent this to me. This was an article from The Federalist about Emily Ratajkowski. I'm not exactly sure how to say her name. I guess she's some kind of actress or something. Not really familiar with her. But she's now pregnant, and she gave an interview. And in the interview, she laments how unfair it is that women get pregnant. It's kind of like feminists are saying, how dare biology not respect our ideology? How dare biology not respect our ideology of equality? This is what she says. I'll just read to you from the Federalist article. Emily Ratajkowski in the interview moves on to lament how unfair pregnancy seems, resenting that biology does not respect the feminist ideal of perfect equality between the sexes for growing a baby. She says, "My husband has no physical symptoms in our pregnancy, another reminder of how different a woman and man's experience of life can be." It's as if she's describing herself as a victim of the facts of nature, a victim of her own biology. She finds in nature or in creation or in biology a reason to resent men. It used to be an honor. Women saw it as an honor that they were the ones who could carry new life in themselves, that they had this great privilege of being the ones to bring new life into the world. But now it's become something for women to resent. And as is always the case for feminists, the differences between the sexes are not something to appreciate and even celebrate. They become something to resent. They are a problem to be solved and overcome. Feminists are simply angry with the way God made the world, with the way God designed the world. And you see that coming over in this interview that she gives. AOC, the congressman from New York, is going through the same kind of issues. She is now in her early 30s, and just in the last week, there was an article where she talks about whether or not she should freeze her eggs. She's wondering if she should have some eggs frozen. But then she notes how unfair this is, how sexist nature is. Again, it's not really men who are oppressing women. I mean, a lot of times this comes out. It's actually nature itself. It's biology that is oppressing women. And so she says this. She says, we women have to make these choices men simply don't have to make. Okay, as if, you know, we women have this extra burden of having to make this decision whether or not to freeze our eggs, and obviously no man has to make that decision. You know, you poor thing, having to decide whether or not to freeze eggs. You know, another victim of nature's cruelty. It's like nature is conspiring to work against these women and keep them from doing what they really want to do with their lives. Let me go a little further back in feminist history and give you a little more context for this, because what you're seeing emerge here is a real disdain for motherhood. And I would say actually it's hatred of motherhood that is the cornerstone of feminism. You see it in abortion, which is the ultimate despising of motherhood, murdering your own offspring. But it goes way back even before Roe versus Wade, even before legalized abortion. Simone de Beauvoir wrote a book. She was a French woman. She wrote a book in 1949 entitled The Second Sex, a book which became known as the Feminist Bible. And in the book, she chronicles all the ways in which women are being oppressed, ways in which women are being oppressed by men and by marriage especially. She especially attacks marriage. Marriage is seen as this oppressive institution. She despises those women who choose to devote themselves to husband and children as a homemaker. In fact, this is a little bit later after the book was written, but she actually advocated that homemaking be made illegal. This is what she said. No woman should be authorized to stay home, that is allowed by the state. No woman should be authorized to stay home and raise her children. Women should not have that choice, because if there is such a choice, too many women will make that one. Now, what's interesting about de Beauvoir is...